You're listening to an encore presentation of The Rush with Ryan and Jay on In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010.
And now, time to feel the rush of the round table.
Sometimes people cross that line.
I think that's the brilliant part of the story.
There's a danger in all sides.
The round table, brought to you by Kotak Personal Injury Law. Get the team that has your back. Kotak, your trusted long-term disability lawyers. KOTAKlaw.com.
Ryan and Jay here on The Rush this afternoon. Don't forget, 6 o'clock, Dave McKee is here with his views on the news. We welcome in the roundtable, Bill Carroll, host of The Morning Rush at our sister station CFRA in Ottawa, Amanda Galbraith, principal at Navigator, and Marika Walsh returns, Queen's Park correspondent for iPolitics. Great to have everybody. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Hello.
25 people and companies will be selected in the province's recent retail license lottery for bricks and mortar cannabis retail stores. The licenses going to be divided regionally, 5 going to the east of the province, 7 in the west, 2 up north, 6 in the GTA, and 5 in Toronto, including the very first one, which is going to be at 20 Cumberland Street in the heart of Yorkville. How does everybody feel about this? Specifically, though, first, how does Toronto Councillor Mike Layton feel about it?
This comes as news to us. They haven't involved the city or the community in determining where appropriate spaces are for these locations. Now, that was very different under the previous government. The agency, the Ontario Cannabis Store, came to us and looked at proposed locations and started to narrow down their list. With this government, we haven't seen that same level of collaboration.
I don't know, Bill. It doesn't seem so much like a not in my backyard, so much as I would have liked a little bit more info. But, I mean, we got to put these stores somewhere. And if anything, I think a store there would thrive.
Well, hey, back to where it all began. Peace and love, the hippie movement, right? The coffee shops, right? Couldn't be better than Yorkville. You know what? We all knew this was coming because in order to apply in the lottery, you had to have an address, a business address. So we knew they were going to pop up somewhere, and we weren't clear on what the regulations were going to be. I personally, honestly, don't care. You can grow this stuff in your house legally now. Kids are going to get their hands on it anyway. Whether you sell it next door to a school or out in the middle of nowhere, it's not going to make any difference. Put it in Yorkville, have at it.
And Amanda, it's interesting because when I hear people complain about the locations of these stores and what the outside of them are going to look like and the people that will be hanging around, have these people never seen some of the stores that exist in California? Like they look like W hotels. Like some of these properties are absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, and I think that is going to be a big part of the industry, right? Which is shedding this vibe of, you know, like messy, illegal this and whatever, and showing that it's approachable for women, showing that it's approachable for family, like they're like people that wouldn't have typically done this. So yeah, these stores are beautifully done in California. They will probably be beautifully done here, I'm guessing, particularly in Yorkville. I think the city of Toronto loves nothing better than a good old consultation. So I'm actually I think the government, the province did a good job here saying opt in or opt out. This is how it's going to happen. We don't need to consult this to death. It should occur. It should move forward. Yorkville makes a ton of sense to me. It's right on the subway line. It's frankly in the middle of downtown. I think it'll be a lovely little store and we'll all breathe.
It's a boutique.
Boutique. Yeah. It'll be a lovely boutique that I can go there after I get a coffee or something.
I'll tell you something. I live in the beach area, Marika. I'd welcome half a dozen shops or maybe 12 shops just because there's so many empty storefronts. I think we'd welcome the retail business.
Yeah, you might have to wait for that one a little bit.
Probably.
Maybe a few years, maybe a decade. I'm not sure how fast they'll move, but I mean, it seems from this article that actually the whole point is they're starting the consultation now by posting online. So I think we'll see, right? If the consultation happens, people respond and they respond to that, then there's a consultation.
Yeah, I'm just tired of the NIMBYs. And I mean, come on, it's Yorkville. Like, really?
It's fine.
Like, we're all of a sudden, oh, rich people. They're not going to smoke
anything. It's hilarious that it's going to be in Yorkville.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong. I don't think there's anything wrong. Anyway, let's talk about this because, man, our phone lines and text board have just been going wild this afternoon. Children, Community, and Social Services Minister Lisa McLeod announced today that families will be getting funding until their kid turns 18. That is funding for autism. When it comes to our autism program, that has been overhauled. The funding now will be given directly to families instead of regional service providers. They're trying to clear a backlog here, Bill. The wait list is about 23,000 kids. I just think that this is a more of a political announcement than it is one that actually affects and helps parents who are in this situation. And not a surprise to me, the parents who have called in today agree.
Well, Ryan, you know, you and I remember very well when you were producing a show that I was hosting and Dalton McGuinty came in and autism, remember, was going to be right at the top of his list and he was going to fix this problem. And here we are. It's still a huge problem. I don't know that this idea fixes it. I think if you're not in treatment right now, your child's not in treatment right now, you might be happy to have the money and be able to get some treatment. If you're already in the system, you may see this as not enough money because the cost is too expensive. So I'm not optimistic that it's the solution, but it might be better than what we have. And I just don't know how you fix this problem without a lot of money that we just don't have.
Yeah, Amanda, when you look at it, I mean, I think a lot of this is spin, I got to be honest. But when you spin a story like this on an election, a re-election campaign, they can say that they cleared the autism waiting list, which is going to sound great. Every family is going to get a little something. They're going to get some money to go towards treatment. But it is that. It is just a little something. When you look at $140,000 over a 16-year period for a kid who might require $80,000 worth of treatment in 1 year.
Yeah. But I will say this. I don't think any government tackles the autism challenge with the idea that they're going to win an election on it. I think this is a thorny issue that, as we said, every party of every stripe has tried to do. Like, I believe that the minister and this government are trying to do the right thing. I think this is an incredibly complicated file. From my perspective, I kind of take the same, I know we debated this when I was on the show with you ages ago, the basic income pilot, right? Mm-hmm. Which is it benefited very few people immensely. And then a whole bunch of other people got nothing. And I really do feel like government should help people a little bit as much as they can, and we should spread that out as opposed to cherry picking. You know, 25% of kids with autism, and everybody else just gets like nothing. They sit there and like they live on a waiting list, which I don't think is the right thing. So, is this a perfect solution? I'm sure it's probably not for lots of families, but I do. At least they're trying to clear that backlog, which frankly is shameful that people are waiting years and years and years for.
But did you not get the sense today that it was being sold as we fixed this problem? Because I got that sense.
I think that when you do a major policy undertaking like they have done, like which I have done when I've been in government and as a comms person, you load up and you go out aggressively to try and tell people why this is important because you know you're going to get a ton of reaction, right? And it's not the first 24 hours is important, but what's really critical is the next couple weeks and how this shapes out and how you communicate it and how whatever. Of course, people are going to freak because it's change. So there definitely is an aspect of that, but that's not wrong. That's part of actually being in government and communicating.
Yeah. I think, though, the problem is that because they have made these really big promises, like clearing the wait list, like making the system more fair and more sustainable, it means that they will be held accountable for those comments.
Sure.
In 2 or 3 years when the rubber hits the road and people have run out of money. And that's the real fear that I've heard from people with kids who have the high needs autism. It's not so much that the kids with low needs won't get the help. It's that the kids with high needs will run out of help and will run out of money. And parents are worried they'll be back to a case where they're remortgaging their house mm-hmm. to try and pay for it. And so, you know, the Green Party took an interesting stance on this today. They said this was a good first step because of the emphasis on clearing the wait list, but they really made the point that that part, that piece of the puzzle still needs to be solved. And many people are saying that piece of the puzzle has been made worse by this announcement.
It was interesting, too, today, Ryan, just before the roundtable, we spoke with a mom who has been on that list for 5, 6, 7 years for 2 of her children. And when we asked her if she's going to be happy to at least get something, she very quickly said, no, I don't like this already, despite the fact that I'm probably going to get money right away.
Yeah, and you've got other families who are getting a lot now that might have that number reduced, which is going to be an issue in its own right.
It is an unsafe day to be working, although most of us are doing just that. Although the ones that aren't doing it today are our friends at Canada Post, citing icy conditions across southern Ontario. Now, we were talking about this earlier today. It seems as if the major dumping of snow that we had in the Toronto area last week might have been a better day to cancel mail delivery. But I got to ask you, Bill, had they have not told us they were canceling mail delivery and just didn't go out, would anybody have noticed?
I don't know. I'm waiting for a clothing delivery.
Mailbox, so I check about once every 2 weeks. So I wouldn't have noticed.
You're a Superbox
guy. You know, I made fun of the union when they said that delivering mail is more dangerous than being a miner. I think, you know, they exaggerate the risk greatly. But when you have freezing rain and people haven't had a chance or aren't going to bother to get out and clear their front steps and their walkways, it is pretty treacherous. Probably no mail carrier is going to die, but you can get some fairly serious injuries. I mean, when you decide you don't want to run school buses, maybe you can hold back on the mail and wait for that parcel from the cannabis store for another day.
Well, you know what? Optically, Mariko, when you're talking about you know, an industry that not a lot of people think are going to be is going to be around in about 10 years, I guess you kind of nailed it when you said, well, I'm waiting for clothes to arrive.
Yeah, I think, you know, there. I'd be interested to see how they come to this decision, right? Because there's costs for the union to pay people when they're telling them to stay home. But there's other costs if they have so many people slipping and falling that they have people in long-term disability. I have no idea what that calculation is for them. But I think Bill does make the point that people aren't clearing their walks. At the same time,
sure.
there is an overcautiousness that seems to happen with all these kinds of things.
Amanda, let me, because this is my solution. Just use a little, tell your drivers to use a little discretion. Tell your postal people to use a little mm-hmm. discretion. If there's a street or a sidewalk or a laneway that you can't get up and down safely, then just don't do it. You bring the packages back to headquarters.
Sure. You know what? I thought
I know.
There was that slogan, neither rain nor sleet nor snow will delay us from completing our whatever. So I googled,
right.
I was going to read that out loud and say the U.S. Postal Service is more effective. That's actually not a real slogan. It's just a myth. So apparently.
Collect government after government.
Such a good
have
slogan,
allowed
though.
Them to collectively bargain. The unions have rules about when they work and when they don't that I'm sure almost impossible to overcome. And so they probably just said. No one's going to be delivering mail on an individual basis. Let's just call it a day.
I'll tell you who took that oath seriously today, though, because I saw them on my way into work, is the food delivery men and women on bikes.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So these people are
They're
motivated.
Intense.
They're
I feel
motivated.
So bad
they are.
For them.
People need to eat.
And probably more people are calling and asking
yeah,
for
exactly.
it now.
It's mail delivery people that are at home looking for food.
Let's finish with this one very quickly. A growing number of couples seeking divorce are taking matters into their own hands now, according to the experts. People are looking for alternative dispute resolutions, and they're exploring self-representation and using apps, Bill, in the divorce process.
I was just going to use Gwyneth Paltrow if it came down to it, because we can consciously uncouple. Everyone will be happy. You can bring your ex-spouse on your new honeymoon together. It's all great. Listen, anything you can do to make it cheaper and faster is ultimately good for the kids in the relationship. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, man, it's interesting because they say some of the bitterness can be taken out of it when you have technology as sort of the middleman.
Yeah, and I think you just want to get it done fast, right? I don't think anyone wants to drag it out. And the longer it takes, the more annoyed you get. So this makes sense to me, especially I think when you're younger couples, we see a lot of young, like a lot of college friends of mine, like early 30s, late 20s, they're getting rid of the first marriage and on to the next. So
you can do that from your phone.
Exactly. You can date on the Tinder, then you go to the next one, you're finalizing your divorce in an app. I'm ordering food because the postal people aren't delivering anything. I've got everything on my phone now.
Marika, any surprises? This is where we're headed?
No surprises. I think, though, the one thing is that especially for parents who are in a divorce, there a lot of the time it ends up in court because people are so angry and they're fighting. So people have to be able to put that aside if they're actually going to make the most of these things.
Marika Walsh, Amanda Galbraith, and Bill Carroll, thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There you go. We didn't even need tech. Well, I guess we used technology in some ways, but yeah. All right, fair enough. I corrected myself very quickly.
The Roundtable was brought to you by Kotak Personal Injury Law. Get the team that has your back. Kotak, your trusted long-term disability lawyers. Call 1-888-GO-KOTAK.